And I've worked very closely with the Orange County group. I look forward to working very closely with the Sullivan County group because we have had great successes, and that success can be spread amongst the district. And that's real world experience, again, that I have that I can bring to the table that it, once again, makes me feel, of course, that I'm the best candidate for the position.
Now, one of the biggest industry, the biggest employer in our area, in Sullivan County anyway, you know, is tourism, basically. And a lot of that hinges on just all the natural resources that we have. So the environment is a key issue for many folks and has an impact on other things like economic issues. What's your approach to environmental concerns in our area?
Once again, what I've done my whole life, water and sewer infrastructure, all development, all tourism, all things like that are driven by infrastructure and the infrastructure to sustain it. Overbuilding happens when we don't have proper infrastructure in place. Smart, collaborative infrastructure planning, infrastructure design, infrastructure implementation, where it should be and where it shouldn't be. Those are definitely topics that are on top of my list. Those are definitely topics I have a lot of real world experience with. When it comes to tourism, tourism in Sullivan County specifically is literally what keeps this county afloat. We have an amazing abundance of natural resources, beautiful places in Sullivan County where tourism flourishes. And what we need to do is we need to work again collectively to allow that tourism to flourish, allow the folks that provide that tourism to be able to do it, not to overregulate them, not to put too many constraints on them, but at the same time, protecting our environment, protecting our natural resources, and continue to make this one of the nicest places in all of the Hudson Valley, all of New York State, and all of the country to live, to work, and to recreate in. And we know that we have people that come from all over, literally the country and the world, to Sullivan County for various tourism. And I would certainly work hard to keep that, number one, going, and number two, to keep that improving.
Now, we've got a section here on public safety, which you gave a pretty good overview on in the beginning and saying, you know, that in your words, crime is off the rails. So you're concerned about crime, concerned about, you know, the corrections facilities closing. But you also mentioned bail reform. And I wanted to give you a moment to talk more in depth on that issue in New York State. It's been a contentious topic in New York State for years now. What's your stance on the current law? What do you think needs to be done, if anything?
We definitely need to reinvestigate the laws that were put in place in 2019, the no cash bail, the bail reform as it quote unquote is. That definitely needs to be looked at. If anyone says that they don't see a problem, a spike, more crime, worse crime, they are definitely, I don't know where they're living. They're not living here. What happens is we have literally taken misdemeanors and felonies and turned them into a parking ticket. You're arrested. You literally are back out on the street before the police officer has his report done or her report done. That needs to stop. That needs to be taken care of. One of the biggest things we talk about all the time when we talk about public safety and we talk about the ability to be able to live, work, and recreate safely. If we're not safe in our communities, if we're not safe walking down Broadway in Monticello, if we're not safe walking down Main Street in Jeffersonville, if we're not safe walking down Main Street in Middletown or Walk Hill, we have a problem. And right now, we definitely have a problem. People don't feel safe. They just don't. And it's unfortunate. And what we need to do is we need to put the laws that are in place, we need to be able to take those. We need to be able to reinvestigate them. We need to be able to put the ability to hold people responsible back in the judge's hands and the judge, the scales of justice. There's a reason that there's blind. We need to put that back in the judge's hands, take it out of our politicized district attorneys and allow judges to judge and allow police to police and allow communities to be safe. That definitely needs to happen.
So you're running in the 100th Assembly District. You mentioned before how long Aileen Gunther's been serving there. She's representing this area for more than 20 years. Before that, her husband, Jake Gunther, represented it for at least a decade. So this is going to be the first time in more than 30 years. Next year will be the first time in more than 30 years that somebody not named Gunther will be representing voters in this area. What do you think of that?
Well, it's kind of bittersweet. It truly is, because I am a Republican conservative, And Aileen Gunther, and my experience has been with Aileen, not too much with Jake, rest his soul. But Aileen Gunther has been a very centrist public servant in the legislature. I have a great relationship with Aileen Gunther. And the day that she announced, and we found out that she announced that she wasn't running, the first text message I made that morning was to Aileen Gunther. I texted her at 7 o'clock in the morning, and she's an early riser, and she called me back, and I said, "Hey, what's going on? I just heard the news." And she said, "It's time." And again, not to talk too much about her private life, but she said, "It's time." And she said, "I want to be a grandma." And I said, "Well, I want to be an assemblyman." And we had an awesome conversation. And since that time, like I said, we're moving forward. We sit on different sides of the aisle. But a lot of the things that Aileen was pushing for and Aileen was getting done, a lot of those things are literally on my radar screen. And that was a good collaboration, a good ability to work with her. I worked with her on numerous projects and grants, things like that in the town of Wallkill, in my fire district specifically in Howells. I'm looking to take her legacy and move forward, of course, because there is a legacy there. That's for sure. But I'm looking to take it forward with a fresh voice, a fresh vision, and, you know, take it to the next level. I'm looking to collaborate. I'm looking to work across the aisle. That's for sure. What I want to do is I want to get a seat at the table. I want to get a seat at the table, because what happens right now, unfortunately, once again, with the supermajority in Albany, the Republican conservatives do not have a seat at the table. They negotiate in hallways. They're handed information at 11 o'clock at night to vote on at 2 in the morning. And that just needs to stop. It really does.
Yeah, well, as soon as you said a seat at the table, my next question would be like, well, is that going to be enough? So what you're saying, I guess I'm going to change the question, is getting elected to represent this district enough to get a seat at the table? And if not, what else needs to happen?
Well, to answer your question, yes, it does. Anyone that knows me knows that I care about people, knows that I care about the public, and knows that I am a person who likes to get things done. I set deadlines, not only for myself, but for the folks that work with me. We set deadlines. If, in fact, when I am successful in this position and I get my seat at the table on January 1st, they will know that I'm there. They will know that I'm there. They'll know that I'm a strong voice for our community. I will represent everyone in this district, Republican, Democrat, Independent, blank. I will represent everyone to the utmost. Right now, 3 seats need to be flipped to break the supermajority. We know in New York State right now that we are there. We can flip these seats. This seat specifically is being called out as one of the prime seats that they know is available. And the reason that is because we have a good, strong, centrist Republican conservative candidate that's going for this seat. And like I said, I know that when I get to Albany, I will be able to make a difference. And it may be an uphill climb, okay? You don't turn a battleship on a dime. It might take a little time, but at the end of the day, they'll know I'm in the House. They'll know that I'm there for the betterment of the 160-some thousand people that live in my district, number one, and number two, the Hudson Valley, and number three, New York State. And my goal is when I get to Albany, I want to be a force to be reckoned with. I honestly do.
All right. Well, as we wrap up here, the last question I've got for you is why would you say folks should vote for you over your opponent?
I think it comes down to real world experience. I think it comes down to helping people. I think it comes down to my dad, God rest his soul. One of his sayings was, "What are you doing when nobody's looking? And why are you doing it?" I have spent a lifetime volunteering in my community. I've spent a lifetime volunteering in my community for little or no remuneration, a choice that I've made. My remuneration, my pay is to see someone's problem solved. My pay is to see someone smile. My pay is to see someone to be able to enjoy their life a little better than they are right now. All that being said, the reason that I feel that I'm the best candidate to do this, I have a lifetime of real world experience. I have a lifetime of infrastructure experience. We know that infrastructure is an issue specifically in Sullivan County. We know that water and sewer is an issue. We know that our CHIPS funding, we know what kind of condition our roads are in. What you're going to have in my candidacy and in me as an assemblyman, you're going to have someone with real world experience. You're going to have someone with subject matter expertise, and you're going to have someone that is going to fight tooth and nail to bring everything back to this district, what it needs, what it deserves, and what our state should be providing that they may not be providing right now.
All right. Well, Lou and Gracia, thank you so much for coming here and for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I, like I said, Radio Catskill, listen in on FM, log in, listen to these folks here. We just had a whole tour of the entire studio and their entire operation here. This is an amazing thing that they're doing, and we really, really need to keep public radio working for the people as it is. And just congratulations on this, the home that you have here. And we're really going to look forward to working with you in the future to sustain and make this home a better place for public radio. Thank you.
Thank you. Best of luck.
And tomorrow we'll bring you Paula Kay, who's seeking the Democratic nomination for the New York, or who has the Democratic nomination, excuse me, who's seeking the seat for the New York 100th District. You can also hear that tonight on the local edition. We're bringing you these interviews on both the local edition and Radio Chatskill to keep you informed this election season. We'll take a break. And when we come back, the new editor of the Shuangunk Journal. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's Electric Mountain, featuring the very best of global dance music. I play the best of dance music from back in the day to today, and every week I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. John D'Amico has been named the new managing editor of the Shuangunk Journal, bringing over a decade of experience in news reporting, video production, and management to the role. He steps into the position previously held by Amberly Jane Campbell, who left to join the Ulster County Executive's Office. The Shuangunk Journal serves Ellenville, Ulster County, and parts of Sullivan. And on the program now, it's John D'Amico. Good morning.
Hi, morning.
Congratulations. Tell me a little bit more about your journey in journalism and what led you to this position as the new managing editor.
Sure. This is a bit of a second career for me. I began in independent film. I had sort of a videography company in college, and I chased that dream for as long as I could until I hit age 26 and needed to get on my own health insurance. So I had been making video journalism on the side as a freelancer for a few places like the Weather Channel and Bloomberg and here and there. And I was able to get a job as an editor for the Weather Channel's digital side covering climate change stuff. And then I sort of clawed my way up to producer there. And then I moved over and did tech reporting at Ziff Davis and sort of bounced around those national outlets in the city for a while. Eventually, I just wanted to sort of disconnect from the national stuff and go back to local reporting, which I think is in some ways more important, and I think is really kind of the lifeblood of journalism and where it needs the most support right now.
So yeah,
that brought me here.
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, we hear a lot about how, quote, local journalism is dying. And some of that is true, but it seems as if there is a healthy publication in the Shuangunk Journal. What do you think are some of those challenges that you face in local journalism today, and how do you plan to address that?
Well, Ulster is really lucky because it actually has a handful of strong publications that, as far as I can tell, are chugging along really well, which is really unusual for a rural county.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of them you can say that about. But in a larger sense, the challenges, I think it's a few things, right? It's money. The model for journalism used to be you made money off of ads and for local papers and then local ads, but Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist aren't going anywhere. So that business is not really what it used to be. And the sort of fracturing of audiences into digital versus print is an interesting one that, it's not necessarily a, killer challenge, but it makes your processes a little different and it makes it a little harder to move along. And then also there's this broader issue right now that it seems like every publication is dealing with, which is just basic trust. A lot of people lost trust in the concept of news. And, a lot of people in the industry are really struggling to figure out how to sort of bring that back and bring back the concept of expertise as a real thing and honest reporting that doesn't alienate or doesn't make people feel unheard. So that's one of the things I really am interested in really trying to focus on here. But yeah, I mean, what you said at the beginning is right. I was lucky enough to come into a really strong publication with a really strong history of being a good paper. I've been sitting at my desk on downtimes, kind of just reading the journal archives to figure out what I don't know, and years of great reporting that I'm lucky enough to be a part of now.
Well, yeah, you know, we know here as a public radio station, we're not just getting people to listen to us at 90.5 on the FM dial. There are a lot of people still doing that in their car and at home, but they're also online and at the website. They're on Instagram. They're on Facebook. They're on their smartphone. So do you see your video production, your background in multimedia influencing your approach to managing the paper and reaching new audiences?
Possibly, but I think not in the ways people expect when they first hear that. When I wrote my first editorial and I introduced myself, I actually got a few emails from people asking whether, you know, the journal was going to turn around and become like an all video operation and an all social media operation. And I told people all the same thing, which is, you know, if I wanted to go work at BuzzFeed, I would go work at BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
We have here. There's a real value to the print side. It's what people depend on a lot. There's a real value to written reporting, which in my experience, having done both written reporting, it has advantages that video doesn't, just as video has advantages that print doesn't. It can be a lot easier to get complicated stories distilled in print than in video, at least in my experience. So we definitely want to add some multimedia stuff. We definitely want to start looking at what it would make sense to film. And also, before I even came here, the journal had been doing live events and debates and that kind of stuff. And that's going to continue. And it seems like that's an easy spot to start exploring how video might come into play as, you know, accessories to that. But like on a basic level, I don't want to rewrite the business model of this, which is that we write articles about what's going on locally for the people who need to know that information.
Yeah, at your core, you are a community newspaper, and that's what you're doing. And you will, you know, expand into those other areas as appropriate. I feel you there. We're talking to John D'Amico. He's the new managing editor of the Shuangguk Journal. There's more information at shuangguk.journal.com or on their Facebook, Instagram at Gunk Journal News. John, we wish you the best of luck, and we'll continue to feature our good friend Chris Rowley every Friday on the local edition for what's going on as a roundup from the Gunk Journal, and we look forward to having you on in future as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, our new intern, Nia Watson, and her first report. This is Radio Chatskill.
Aileen Gunther represented New York's 100th Assembly District for over two decades. Her late husband, Jake, did it for a decade before that. Who will succeed them? Democrat Paula Kay thinks it should be her.
The most important thing here is both Jake and Aileen have delivered for our district, and that I'm the only candidate who will continue to do so. There's continuity here. I think it's important to continue the good work Jake and Aileen have done to bring back to this district, and I will do that.
Candidate interviews continue tonight at 6 on the local edition.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
This is Radio Chatskill. Hanafy Park featured a mix of local vendors and outdoor activities this past weekend at Health Fest, part of Sullivan County's Sullivan County Department of Public Health's efforts to engage with the community and spread visibility about their health care resources. Our new intern, Radio Catskill's Nia Watson, sat down with Erica Acevedo and Darby Nagpal, two public health representatives who oversaw the planning and execution of the event, and she files this report.
Closing out a weekend of wellness, I'm here with public health educator Darby Nagpal and community health coordinator Erica Acevedo to recap Saturday's Health Fest. Can I just ask you to introduce yourselves and tell me a bit about what you do with the Department of Public Health?
Okay, so with myself, Erica speaking. So I am the community health coordinator. Pretty much what I oversee is just the implementation of how efficient our programs are internally and see where we can kind of come together with our resources alongside with education, really get out to the community, especially the underserved communities, the gaps that we provide, any kind of resource, whether it's early intervention, whether it's wound care, whether it's just workshops that need to be provided. Consistently engaging with the community and really, again, circling back to the efficiency of what we're doing. Is it impactful? And figure out ways to improve the areas that could be a better use of our resources, along with our stakeholders and other community-based organizations.
I'm Darby. I'm one of the public health educators. Part of my role is doing outreaches in the community and education. Public health education is a prevention strategy with clinical strategies as well. So the more people know about their health and prevention of chronic disease, non-communicable disease, communicable diseases, we try and get that kind of information out there. In addition to other services that we do offer, because sometimes people just don't know what we do. I also am part of the opioid overdose prevention program. So I do a lot of Narcan trainings. Public health provides EMS, fire, and some law enforcement with Narcan. So we try and make sure everyone is stocked up. And if anyone else in the community is interested in a training, any community-based organization or business, we do that for the general public as well.
Let's get into Health Fest. So how often does Health Fest take place? Is this the first time it's ever happened?
Health Fest is our annual event. It's fairly new. This is our second year doing it. So last year was the first year, and we plan on doing it, you know, every year to come, as far as I know. So next year will be the third annual Health Fest.
And did it also take place at Hanafy Park last year?
Yes, it did take place at Hanafy Park last year and this year. Next year, we're really trying to branch out and see if there's another location that would work great. We've gotten a lot of feedback that Monticello would be a great place to have it next year. So we're looking into new venues. It is something that we want to kind of go around the county so that we can see as much as our community in the county as possible.
The consistent approach of doing it annually, the better the turnout. So right now, we're kind of toying around maybe different time frames. I think last year we hosted our first fair in June, so we had a larger audience, like participation of the community, versus this past September. I think that there's just so much going on with back to school, all different festivals. So it was a bit challenging to kind of engage community members, not our vendors, but like the actual community, to come to Hanafy. Not sure if it was the location or the date, but yeah, to Darby's point, we want to be able to kind of like target different townships within Sullivan County just to kind of get visibility and meet the people and the needs where they are. You mentioned the vendors. What are some of the vendors who were featured in this event?
We had a lot. We had a big variety of vendors. So some of the vendors were actually just programs that we have within public health, because again, sometimes people don't know about all the programs we have. So children and youth with special health care needs, our Healthy Families program and maternal child health nursing. Our disease surveillance and investigation department was there as well. So that was some different information, I think, that might have been new to some people in addition to our education department. But other than that, we had ATI, Action Towards Independence. Vets of Vet were there. They're always a strong organization in our community. Independent Living, Garnet Health was there, Prasad, and
Saul, Ellenville Regional Hospital. Yeah. We had our Rural Health Network coordinator for Sullivan County and Ellenville Regional Hospital there participating. We had Hudson Valley Legal,
Services.
Yeah. We had some health insurances. So it was a really great overall participation. We originally had scheduled 27 vendors, I believe 25. Showcase.
We even had the Bridge Back to Life van was there. Mobile Mental Health was there. Yeah, quite the variety.
And how was the visitor turnout?
Again, it wasn't as big as our previous year, but I think to Erica's point, we're toying around with the right location, the right time of year. It was only our second year, so we think that the more we do it, and again, the more consistent we stay with it, the better it's going to be. So next year, it'll be even better.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to toy around, maybe perhaps hosting the event not on a weekend. I mean, we did things like this get planned a year in advance, but it's kind of hard to determine what other neighboring institutions have planned, especially with back to school. So we're trying to toy around maybe with a better, perhaps doing it end of school year versus back to school, where there's so many festivals and different initiatives for other things.
So according to a 2024 report from County Health Rankings and Roadmaps, Sullivan County is showing lower health rates compared to other counties in New York, but there's been a general improvement in overall health in Sullivan County in the last year. So with that in mind, I'm wondering if and how the Department of Health hopes to sort of change that. Are there going to be more events like Health Fest in the future?
We want to remain as engaged as possible with the community, keep building our needs assessment, and just really collaborating with truly the understanding of the needs, right? I mean, we are an underserved community. There is a lot of poverty. There is more homelessness than there ever has been. So it makes the work a bit challenging as far as like the efforts and the consistency that we do want to build. So we do want to be able to meet our community members where they're at. So perhaps maybe we won't be able to fund a big event all the time, but we'll maintain constant outreaches and even with our community health workers, keep engaging with referrals and really trying to meet our communities where they're at, whether it be going into an underserved community and saying, hey, you know, we have a free flu clinic if you don't have insurance, or if it's just, hey, you know, maybe you don't know how to call for these services, I have someone that can come to your home if you need help and we can help that. Or if, you know, you find yourself in a food desert area, we might have a community health worker that could probably help take you or help your family in that need. Or if you find yourself where you're a new time parent and you don't even know the first spaces of caring for a child, we have our maternity child health nurses. So I think that it is important to come together and have all these different services under the umbrella, but also kind of showcase that we care too on a one-to-one basis. We are a community that doesn't have mass transit where you're able to kind of go to our urgent care center. We don't have many medical facilities. We are limited too as a health department with our funding, but that doesn't mean that we can't meet our community members where they're at in order to help support them, whether it just be understanding a hospital document because the literacy might be too advanced for them, or just knowing, hey, you know, you do have rights. That's really overall the goal and mission, to make sure that people can trust us as an entity, that regardless of the services that we provide, if they're limited, we are still advocates for our community.
So a lot to look forward to mm-hmm. for the future.
With the increase of population also in Sullivan County, there's work to be done, absolutely, and to continue to keep improving
the areas that we need to establish a stronger foundation, because we want to be able to build all these different programmings, but we want to also make sure that they're effective and they're efficient, and that whatever that we choose to do 100% is impactful, and that our community is receiving the best, because that's what we want.
Representatives from the Department of Public Health, Erica Acevedo and Darby Nagpal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
In Liberty, I'm Nia Watson for Radio Catskill.
And thanks to Nia. She's our new intern, as I mentioned, and we look forward to more of her reports this semester. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Owen Walsh, you might recognize that name if you're a longtime listener of Radio Catskill, will refresh your memory and tell you about what he's doing now after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Imagine you are a liquid creature.
On the next Radio Lab,
no bones, and you are so pliable that you can literally...
The story of an unexpected...
Pour your body through a tiny opening.
Escape artist.
The predator is fooled into believing you're still there.
That's on the next Radio Lab. This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Owen Walsh has been telling stories and performing music his entire life. He began playing violin at the age of 3, studying formal repertoire. At 12 years old, he found his dad's dusty old Epiphone guitar tucked in a closet and taught himself how to play. Soon after learning his first chords, he began writing songs. He's playing at the Arts Nests this Saturday in Lake Huntington, and he joins us live in the studio now. And Owen, before the break, I mentioned that some folks might recognize your name if they're longtime listeners of Radio Catskill, because Owen Walsh used to be Owen Walsh from The River Reporter.
That's correct. Yeah, and I used to call in to this station once a week to talk about kind of the local news for the week and what's going on.
You were reporting for The River Reporter, and you, as we said, have been telling stories and performing music. So how did you make that leap from journalism to, back to, I guess, music?
Yeah, so it's always kind of been some two things that I did in tandem. Actually, you know, feels like a long time ago now. When I was going to Ithaca College, I was studying journalism as my major, but minoring in music. And, you know, it's just always been, I've always liked to write and, you know, in a that more journalistic kind of formal way. But I've also just always been, as you mentioned up top, playing violin, playing guitar and singing. So I've always just kind of done both, and it was just, you know, in the past few years, I just decided that, you know, I was finally ready to take the leap and try to make a go of it, performing my own original songwriting and, you know, try to get it out in front of as many people as I can just for, you know, as long as I can.
You left the, well, you grew up in Honesdale. You,
yep.
Then, you know, as you said, went to college, came back, worked at the River Reporter, left, went down to Asheville. How's that going? You're back now for a gig this weekend, but you're based down there. How's that going?
It's been really great so far, you know, but a couple years ago, my fiance and I were living in New York City. That was kind of the first big move out of the Wayne County, PA area that we did because she, her name's Molly, she was going to grad school at Columbia. So we spent a year in New York City. And, you know, New York is a very different vibe than Wayne County, Pennsylvania, as I think everyone can imagine.
You folks know about that, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so, and it was kind of not really what we were looking for in a living situation. And I think with how expensive it is to live in New York City, you have to really be in love with being there. So, you know, I knew I wanted to go somewhere new, not just come back to Wayne County, even though I love Wayne County, but I wanted to experience a new place and perform in a new place. And everyone for years had just told me, you know, Asheville has this, you know, really thriving music scene. You know, it's a really cool place to be. And just kind of took a stab in the dark and took a trip down there with Molly, and we both loved it immediately. And yeah, now we've been living there for a year and a half, and yeah, couldn't be happier.
How does that background in journalism help you with your songwriting?
I think that it's interesting because there's the style of music that I do is probably best summed up as folk music or Americana music. And I think folk singers, at least the good ones and the type that I strive to be, kind of act as, you know, these musical journalists of, you know, the time that they're living in. And then as the years go by, these folk songs almost become little pieces of history. So it's like, you know, starts out as a journalism, and then, folk singers end up being kind of historians talking about, even if they're not singing about these true things that happen, like hopefully journalism is talking about true things. Folk singers are really capturing the sights and sounds of the time and the place that they're living in. And, they're really capturing kind of this time capsule for people to look back on.
Speaking of time capsule, you talk about that growing up in Wayne County in Honesdale, historic town. You say you were surrounded by, quote, relics of 19th century American life and imagery ripe for musical exploitation.
Yeah.
So talk about how growing up there influenced your writing.
I think I was interviewed by a writer at the, my former employer at the River Reporter recently, and they asked me about this too. And, I had a tough time at first answering, how did Honesdale influence the way that I write? And I think it is just, again, that phrase Americana. Honesdale has that, it's the birthplace of the American Railroad, and it has that look of just, some bygone industries that, were once thriving, and the D&H Canal and the timber industries and the coal mining back in the day. And, it's just this, it's a difficult thing to put your finger on, but it's just like a different type of American life, that, is very romantic, and, the aesthetics of it are very, intriguing to me. And I think, when I write songs, even though I'm not trying to necessarily write about Honesdale or Honesdale history in particular, I think I am striving just for that kind of older aesthetic to come through in my songwriting.
Yeah, there's a little bit of small town life. I guess in other parts of the country would be country music versus this more kind of folk Americana vibe that you are influenced by.
Yes.
But feeling there is a performance festival there called Roots and Rhythm. Like there's a roots kind of aspect to it too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. American roots music is exactly right. And I was just saying to another musician the other day, I feel like the further back you go into music history, the less of a divide between folk and country music there is, like Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan were doing the same thing, really.
Right. Yeah. So we're not talking about the commercial part. We're talking about the music.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of music, you brought your guitar with us.
I did.
With you. What are you going to play for us? What do you think you want to strum a few chords of to give folks a taste of your sound?
Well, there's a song that I wrote a couple years ago that maybe fits the theme of what we were just talking about with kind of local culture and history. Between Wayne County and Sullivan County, there's several bridges that go over the Delaware River. And there's one that growing up, always knew as the Skinner's Falls Bridge. And some people call it the Milanville Bridge, maybe. But a couple of years ago, working as a reporter with the River Reporter, there was this, which I'm sure is still an ongoing story about the, fate of the Skinner's Falls Bridge.
Yes.
Yep. And, there's a Wayne County commissioner talking about it, and he referred to it as the Black Horse Bridge. That just kind of pricked my ears up because I'd never heard anyone call it that before. So I did like a little digging, and my understanding is there used to be a tavern on the New York side called the Black Horse Tavern. Back when the drinking age in New York was 18 and it was 21 in Pennsylvania, the old, the young bucks
that was PA the bridge
would go over the bridge and check out the Black Horse Tavern. So I just thought that phrase Black Horse Bridge was a sounded like it should be a folk song. So I tried to turn it into one.
All right. Here's Owen Walsh with Black Horse Bridge.
Woke up this morning and looked up high. Saw a death letter written in the sky. Saw my name underlined in red. And I knew right away that
that I was dead. I went to the river, it was boiling dry. Bad place to live, worst place to die. And I saw smoke where the water once ran. And I saw ghosts where I once saw man. Lord, if you take me, don't do it today. I'll follow you down, you know that I won't run away. It's just that I don't want to die up here on Breckenridge Ridge. Lord, if I'm going down, going way to town, I'll die beneath the Black Horse Bridge.
That is Owen Walsh with just a portion of Black Horse Bridge. We've got to go. We're running out of time. But if you want to hear more, two opportunities for you. This Saturday at 3, Owen will be a special guest on Now and Then with Kathy Geary.
That's
at 3.
Right.
And then later that night, playing at the Arts Nest in Lake Huntington.
Yep, at 7 o'clock.
All right. Owen Walsh, thank you so much. More information at owenwalshmusic.com.
Thank you.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Tomorrow, our election coverage continues. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi there, this is Brian, host of The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop, some new music, and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, considerable cloudiness, a high of 75, overcast tonight too, with a potential of a shower in places, low 54. Tomorrow, clouds break for some sun, high 81, and by Friday, still cloudy, but not as warm, high 72. It's 11 o'clock.